Welcome, everyone, to what promises to be a unique and intriguing conversation tonight on Thrive. This is your host, Maureen Moss. I have known my guest tonight, Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey, for more than a decade. Meg is a catalyst for all of humanity's upliftment, though perhaps with an emphasis on the evolution of the children most recently born on our planet and delivered into our care. Their evolution needs our support, for these are the spectacular children that will take over what we are just beginning to start to unfold. They have gifts and knowings and DNA hardwired for peace. They are spectacular beings that will influence and shape-shift the society of humanity forevermore, but they need our help, all of our help. Tonight we will talk not only about them, but also about our part in supporting them to succeed at what they came to this planet to do and to be. For those of you not familiar with Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey, she is the author of her latest book, The Children of Now Evolution, How We Can Support the Fast-Forward Evolution of Our Children and All of Humanity, the international bestseller, The Children of Now, along with several other books, including Conversations with the Children of Now, The Art of Living Out Loud, and The Secret History of Consciousness. Dr. Meg is the creator also of the Touching the Light healing modality and offers certification courses. She is an international keynote speaker and lecturer worldwide. Dr. Meg holds a doctoral degree in metaphysics and has served as a consultant to Good Morning America and 2020. And you can visit her gorgeous new website at www.spiritlite.com. Welcome, Meg.
What a great intro. Thanks, Maureen. It's great to be back with you on the show.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again. I'm so happy, and I'm so happy for you about this new book, which is absolutely extraordinary. And it's really, I think I read this somewhere that in your press work or your media kit, and I had actually written that this really is a book of authority and startling revelations about the children of now evolution and their natural ability to be the bringers of a new dawn to humanity. So, Meg, what is the magic of these children who embody unconditional love and have the foresight to see a new future for humanity and our planet?
Thank you. You know, when I first wrote about the children of now in my book that was called that, I thought I was dealing with what kind of a niche phenomenon, you know, where there were just certain children who had these gifts and abilities and that kind of thing. And then as I traveled around the world, literally, and listened to people's questions about the children, I realized that this is a much greater phenomenon than I had originally thought. And I got questions about so many different subjects that I felt that I needed to write a follow-up with what I did not know back then, and that is the Children of Now Evolution. What's happening is that we're in a fast-forward evolution of humanity. We are more intelligent, and we are more consciously aware. And those two hand-in-hand create significant differences in our bodies, in our DNA, and even how we live in the world. We, you and me, and many of the people listening, are the bridge generation. We're the ones that had some knowings, had some abilities of different kinds, intuition or, you know, knowing who was on the phone or what people were thinking, or we might have even seen or experienced some paranormal activities. And we were put down for that. We were told it wasn't real, blah, blah, blah. We stopped talking about it or we stopped doing it because we felt ashamed in many cases. Mm-hmm. But then, as time went on, that part of us kept nagging and saying, you know what, I'm here, wake up. And so people started waking back up to who they've always been. And it's not really an awakening, it's a remembering. Because that part of us, through no fault of our own, but just time and events, had evolved out. When we stepped up and we said, I am, as many of us have, and we did that in such massive numbers, we actually passed critical mass. You know, there was a lot of talk during the 2000s, early 2000s or late 90s about reaching critical mass, about the 100th monkey syndrome. When the 100th monkey figures it out, then all monkeys know it. Well, it's a scientific principle. We're not monkeys. But that's what happened. We passed it. We did it just by being who we are. And because of that, our children are being born into the world with many of their different types of abilities intact, and they're using them. I mean, they know how to, they're master energy workers, healers, intuitives. And what's really neat is we've got one segment being the Crystal Kids who are really socially aware, and we can talk about this in more detail in a little bit. But
yeah, we will.
Thanks. And they're socially aware, and they're all about love, and they remember past lives, and they have such great intuitive nature, and they're little forces. And then we have the Star Kids, who are, these are the main two categories right now. And they are technologically oriented. They're all about the earth. They're all about the animals. They're all about the balance of how we're living on the planet. And they're very interested in creating new technologies. So we've got a perfect marriage of abilities and awarenesses coming into our world at the time when we greatest need it. So what's happening is not only is consciousness evolving, but so is intelligence. I mean, think back to 1950s, how simple everything was. What did TV show from back then look like? And compare it to now. There is so much coming at us. And these kids are born sentient. And what I mean by that is they have more than five senses. They have those, but they are using their entire bodies like an antenna. And they absorb information like crazy. And how their bodies work and their subtle energy fields work has everything to do with how they're also being damaged. So it's a really big deal. DNA is changing its functioning. We're becoming something different. And much of this is already scientifically validated. I've been doing a lot of DNA research for another project I'm working on. And what I have found is just mind-blowing. That is happening right in front of them in the labs and different things. And so what we're looking at is not just an evolution of consciousness, but a physical and epigenetic, which is the expression of how our DNA learns, phenomenon. It's just remarkable.
So, Meg, and we're going to talk more about the different children in a little while. What I want to know is, how do they have the foresight to see a new future for humanity and our planet? How is it because of their completely different energy patterning? Is it because of their DNA? Is it because of their remembering? How is that so, and what do they see?
Because they're expanded far beyond us because we started that role. When we started becoming who we are and being okay with it, it's kind of like we opened a door for energy in humanity to work differently. So they've inherited it. But at the same time, we've got an energy setup that started before 2012, you know, December, when the planetary alignment happened. Started really back in about 2009, getting real intense awakenings across the board. And then when we had the planetary alignment in 2012, there was a quick kind of a backside of the planet, and then it rotated backwards, and it clicked in, and that kind of rebooted us energetically. And we're still in that phase. You know, we go through these cycles of 26,000 years plus a little bit, and during those cycles we have times that are very deep and dark and violent and ignorant, and then we also have times of awakening, of oneness, of great expanse. And that's where we are right now. We're in the beginning of that new cycle. And, excuse me, they're in that cycle. It's a perfect energy setup for what's happening with consciousness and humanity. Consciousness and our thinking selves, our brains, are very different animals. Our brain is electrical. It does what it's told. And then it tries to make sense of it. And it's electrical, and as it works, it fires, and it creates an electrical field, just like you can measure around your plugs and stuff to see if you've got any leakage. You can use meters to check that. Well, that's happening in our brains as well on a different scale. And so it interrupts our ability to consciousness, which is electromagnetic in nature. And because it is, we either are clear to poke our attention or our intention, whichever you want to do, out into creation and say, hey, this is what I want, and then you can listen back. We're able to do that if we're able to quiet our mind, reduce that electrical expression, in other words. And this is something, you know, that we did historically. There were civilizations before us that we're not able to even track that had high technologies and left evidence of that behind. I've seen it all over the world, literally. As you know, I do this. I take people to these sites and I show them what the ancients were telling us. And what they were telling us is how everything is built and how everything works in creation and how we function within those corridors. And so the children are being born without needing to navigate that map because we set the stage for them, both genetically and epigenetically by the expression of us and by the energetic setup that's happening across dimensions in all of creation. So it's a beautiful time to be alive, and there's so much possibility for what we can achieve and what we can do, and all it requires is awareness that something else is possible. It's not religion. It's not something you learn. It's a way of being. And that's what our children are doing naturally. They're being who they are. And they're saying that they remember where they came from. They remember past lives. They remember choosing their parents. They remember the other side clear as a bell. Until they're about seven and we start to socialize them in an archaic system, however that looks in your world, and as they get more immersed into that, they start becoming desensitized. And that's when we get into even greater problems.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that as well. You know, I wanted to ask you this for the audience. I've known you for a long time. As we were buddies, two hosts on the World Puja Network when it all began.
Yeah.
And how is it, Meg? I'm sure the audience would love to know. How is it that you started to turn in this direction and how the information started coming to you that it has?
Well, it was a little crazy, I'll tell you, Maureen. It was just nuts. First of all, I noticed that my own granddaughter had some amazing abilities. She saw angels. She moved energy like a master. She knew things. She telepathed with me. We'd sit there and play with her giant Legos, and I'd hear, hand me that yellow one over there. And I'd pick it up and I'd hand it to her. I mean, I didn't even realize we weren't speaking out loud. It was so funny. And after about 20 minutes of this, all of a sudden it dawned on me what was happening. And I got so excited that I handed her the wrong block. And then she spoke aloud and she says, Meemaw, that is not what I told you. I was like, holy crap. There's something really interesting going on here. Well, at the same time, I had a healing practice, which I still do, with the touching the light. And I started noticing, I was getting brought all the children who were, everybody thought were broken and nobody could fix because they couldn't find anything medically wrong with them. And what I realized was that they were just differently abled. There was nothing at all wrong with them. It was just everyone's perceptions. And they were scaring people with the things they were saying and doing because we didn't have a framework for that. And then I went on a 7-week, I had a lot of conferences in a row, and I was literally traveling for 7 weeks. And it was an exciting time. I spoke at a conference, and they wrote me, and they said, what are you going to talk about this year? Because I was one of their keynotes every year. And I sat back, and I heard speak of the children. I thought, no way. I'm not a child expert. I don't know what I'm, you know, I'm barely understanding this myself. So I heard it three times. Well, any of us that have been doing this for any amount of time know when something comes in threes, it's true. And I follow that. And so I wrote back, Dr. Meg will speak of the children of now, blah, blah, blah. I had no idea what I was going to do. And I woke up the morning that I was supposed to do this talk, and I couldn't stand up straight. I was trying to iron my jacket. It had got messed up in my luggage. And I was leaning to the right, and I told my husband, I said, something's wrong with me. I don't feel dizzy or anything, but I can't stand up straight. It feels like something's pulling me. And then as the day went on, I was listening farther and farther to the side. And I'm, excuse me, I finally just stopped a minute and looked at my energy field. I'm weird, I can see all that. And there were four orbs attached to my energy field that were not mine, not me, not my energy. And it was really strange, but I had to go do this talk. So I really didn't pay it much more attention. I'm kind of used to weird and didn't think much of it. Did the talk. It was standing room only. The 2 hours ended up doing a third hour in the hallway. And I realized what a big deal this was after all. It was a real wake-up call to me to speak out. And so over those weeks, as I went from place to place, I started to hear children's voices. And I have to tell you, I thought I was losing my mind. And I finally said to them, I had to ask them to be quiet till I got home because they were running my head. I couldn't even have my own thoughts. They were just chattering. And so I went home and I started to write down what I was hearing. And then I stopped and I got away from the computer and I said, almost out loud, look, if you're for real, start showing up because I really need to know that this is true because I'm really careful about what I put out in the world, you know. And one by one, I met all four of them, and they changed my life forever. And what I realized when I met them were that they were some of the beautiful silent ones that could not speak with their physical nature, and they had learned to telepath. And because I'm so sensitive, I guess I was an easy target. But I fell in love with them, and I learned that just because they seem different or what we used to call disabled, that maybe it's just that they're differently abled. And from there, it kind of exploded. That first book is in, gosh, over 30 languages. I've lost count. And it, I hear from people all over the planet literally daily asking me questions. And I thought, well, I really need to write a follow-up because what I learned after that first book was so phenomenally bigger than I could have imagined. I felt obligated to put the answers to the questions out there. So that's what this book does. This book answers a lot of really intense and hard questions.
Yes, it does, indeed.
Mm-hmm. But it was those four little bitty kids and my granddaughter that, and all of the little guys that came on my table that really made me pay attention. I give them all the credit.
And I give you a lot of credit because I remember when you and I would have phone conversations about which authors of which books on spirituality or metaphysics we were going to interview, and to watch you move in this direction and become the expert in this direction and to be so cutting edge and challenging and authoritative has been, it's just been remarkable. And we are very blessed for you following the guidance and to really bring this forward for all of us right now. And so, yeah, on behalf of everyone, I really want to thank you.
Thank you.
Amazing work.
You know what I say, Maureen, this is not a new book. It's a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
What I found out as I began to research made every hair on my body stand up, and in a lot of good ways and in a lot of really scary ways. And
mm-hmm.
I felt like the questions that were asked so many times, and I would look at those people with a jaw drop and say, I really don't know how that applies. And so I started to pay attention, and I'm not kidding. What I came to realize as a bigger picture is quite a phenomenon.
Let's talk about it. You know,
which part would you like to go to first?
I was going to say that to you as you've talked about the many phenomenon. It's certainly not in the order in which I thought we were going to have this conversation, but so be it. There are so many jaw dropping conversations in this book and mm-hmm. information that will challenge many in authority, if you will. What for you, as you began to investigate, became some of the most jaw-dropping information that had to do with these children of the now that we need to know, be it about the GMOs, the vaccinations, the drugs, all of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't even know which is the biggest because they're so mind-blowing, all of them. So
we'll cover them all.
One of the things that came up regularly early on was autism was starting to really show up in our society. And I wasn't sure if this was a related thing or something different. I realized that it is completely relative, and here's why. And here's the second piece to that. Our environment is full of toxins. There are a lot of chemicals that are and drugs and different things that are allowed to be let out into our food chain in different reasons, and I'll go about that in a few minutes. But in our vaccines, some of the things that were allowed to be in there were things such as mercury and thalidomide and other things that are absolutely conductive materials. You know, mercury has been, and they've been putting in our teeth for years, mercury has actually been studied for fuel and interstellar travel, and they put that in children's vaccines as a carrier to the good stuff. Now, I think vaccines are an awesome thing, so don't hear this wrong, but these materials were put in the vaccines to carry the good stuff through the body. Let's just call it that. Well, here's the deal. Modern medicine does not consider the subtle energy field. The subtle energy field is all consciousness. That's what I was kind of alluding to earlier. Consciousness is what makes our body animate. It's what is alive in us. Okay, it's how we are alive with our soul. Our soul and our consciousness are not different from each other. So you take a high frequency child. And what I mean by that is each of us is harmonically put together in a way that we are unique in all of creation. If something were to happen and we were to vaporize, creation would implode. That's how important each of our part is in the construct of all that is. Well, each of us has a unique set of harmonics based on a whole lot of factors. The children's harmonics, because of the setup of the energy we talked about earlier and because of what they inherited epigenetically from us, they are quite sentient. And their whole body is their antenna, not just their five senses. So you inject a conductive material into that frequency set that is already so sensitive, and guess what it does? It speeds up the energy of the consciousness that's in the body, and it expands it. So what happens is, literally, and in the most irregular ways and unpredictable ways, the subtle energy is expanded by that conductive material, and as it is, consciousness is no longer fully present in the body to different degrees. And that's why we have such a spectrum. And they're still using chemicals in them that I'm seeing babies have trouble. You know, they're born normal. And I've personally witnessed this time and time again. The child will have their vaccinations, and then they'll hit the floor. They will go anywhere from a seizure to an undiagnosable high fever to vegetative state and everywhere in between. And that is what the chemicals are doing and what the pharmacological companies are doing to humanity in the name of the big green dollar, you know. And I am infuriated about this because it goes a lot deeper than that in this whole thing. At the same time that the children are being given conductive materials that is totally changing the relationship of consciousness in their human nature, they're also being diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, even bipolar and some other pretty nasty things because they can't sit still. The reason they don't sit still is because the energy that they're feeling in their body builds up. They have to move to shake it off. They're absorbing fractals of information in a 24/7 way, not in their brains, but in their energy fields. They're learning differently than we did. They're storing information differently than we did. They're using their light fields, just like we use fiber optics to transfer data across the planet. Well, they do it in an entire field like their own radio station. And when that happens, it builds up, and they need to shake it off. So they don't fit our normal expectation of what a good child would behave like instead, they are moving around and they don't seem to be, you know, paying attention. They seem to be attention deficit, when in fact, mm-hmm. it's quite the opposite. Ask one of them at the end of the day what they observed, and it will blow your mind.
And so what responsibility now do we have, Meg, to helping, whether there are children or others' children, what responsibility do we have? Because what's happening is it's affecting, as you just said, affecting their consciousness. They came here with a consciousness purposefully to take us into this next cycle of our evolution. If their mm-hmm. consciousness is not intact, what happens then?
Well, we've got a whole bunch of them that are a challenge, and we as a society are allowing it. You know, I've seen a lot of kids pulled out of this with different types of therapies. It's about the fact that we need to stand up and speak up and say, no, that's not okay. Bring me something that is, and I'll conform, or I won't. But we have to remember that these are our kids, and there are lineage, just like we were for our parents before us, and theirs mm-hmm. before theirs, to the infinite. They are the heritage of the earth. And we're, as a society, there is so much ignorance to go on with, to keep this going. It's just scary as heck. You know, the other piece of this is that our technology is outgrowing our psychology. Mm-hmm. Our technology is so fast and furious, and the information that's coming at us, our children are learning depersonalization rather than intimacy and good, solid relationship skills. They're hiding behind social networks and texting. And the video games that are out there are so realistic, it's just enough to make you sick. And they're playing it, and they're being desensitized to what dead really means and what it really means to hurt another person. And so we're seeing a really darker side in society, with children starting to act out, and even young police officers brutalizing people because that is the way the mentality's going. So we as a society need to wake up, and we need to start changing how we're allowing our children to relate and how we're interrelating with each other and bring something different to the table.
I want to talk about a little bit more in depth, because I'm sure that a lot of the audience listening and that will listen into the archives that have children, and they don't know if their children are star children, they're crystalline children, what's the difference between indigo children, which so many of mm-hmm. us at our age were deemed decades ago. What is the difference? How do they denote the differences amongst them, and yet, and as a result of denoting the differences, not for a matter of separation or not as a matter of separation, but in order to best serve them, what do each of them need from their parents and from those around them?
From everybody. That's a great question, and thanks for asking it. Here's the deal. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a bit of an overview, because I could go into detail and we'd be hours. But on my homepage on spiritlight.com, that's spiritlite.com, there is a box that says, is your child a crystalline or a star kid? And if you click those links, there are pages and pages out of the Children of Now that actually give you a nice, succinct list of traits. But I have a caveat here. Most of these kids overlap in many ways, like being intuitive, being natural healers, understanding things deeply, and being able to act on that. So the other piece I wanted to say, and then I'll give you kind of some highlights, is that it was never, ever my intention to label these guys, these little guys. All kids are special, and it's important that who listens tonight, and thank you for being there, by the way, that you hear that this is about every child, not just a few very cool ones, you know, that have special abilities. Every child is special, and everybody's child has what these other children have. It's just a question of whether it's showing up or not. So that being said, because I'm really not wanting the label piece to continue, but I had to find language. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning were the indigos. They were the paradigm busters. The world has heard quite a bit about them. And in fact, indigo is a pretty common word now. I'm really thankful for that because it paved the way for what we're talking about now, Maureen. And they came in the 1980s. And there was a friend of Lee Carroll's who could see energy like I do. And what she noticed was these particular kids had indigo-colored, deep blue-colored energy fields. They're paradigm busters. They stood up to authority. They said, this is for your convenience, not mine, and I'm not interested. And they were kind of laid back about everything. And they were considered discipline problems, but not in a radical way, you know, more like a, hey, something's going on here kind of way. And then there was a period of time where we had a group that I call the transitional kids. And the transitional kids had some of the sensitivities that the indigos had. But then at the same time, the energies were setting up for the crystallines to start coming in. So they had a little bit of a mix of some of everything. And those kids are the ones that tended to internalize a lot. And we're still seeing that even now. And that started, you know, back in the 90s. And these kids had the abilities of a great sensitive nature, but nobody knew anything about this phenomenon. And so they just felt like something was wrong with them, and they got a serious low self-esteem, and they didn't talk about it. Instead, they fantasized. And these are the children who started to hurt themselves with drugs and alcohol, and they would cut themselves so they could feel because they were so closed off. Or they would even, unfortunately, I've seen more than my share of this, commit suicide because they were that deeply disturbed by their sensitivities and nobody was helping pull it out because they didn't know. And then came the magic of the crystallines and the star kids nearly simultaneously. The crystalline kids, when they first started coming and talking about remembering God and picking their parents and who they were in other lives, people said, well, why did you come? Why now? And why do you bring all this with you? And their first answers were, because we forgot how to love each other and ourselves, and they had come back to teach us. Now, in addition to that, they're all about changing the world, and at age 10 or 11, they start doing that. They're very intuitive. They're a powerhouse. They're a force. A crystalline child walks into the room, and everybody's head turns, and they listen to these kids. They're just mind-blowing. They're socially oriented. They're all about fairness and all about people and all from the heart. The star kids, they're a little different, but they have a lot of the overlapping intuitive abilities. The star kids are all about the planet and creating technology, inventing things. And they're very, very special with animals, work on healing animals naturally, and people as well. But they tend to go more to the animals because they can relate more deeply with them from a silent nature. And so we've got such a perfect setup with children who came almost at the same time and did for years and still are coming. But this is changing, and I'm going to address that in a minute. As we have the full yin and yang. We've got the crystallines all about people and heart and the world and everyone having what they need and fairness across the board. And we have another set that is really focused on the planet and technology and how all that fits and how to make it better. And when they start running the world, it's going to be crazy phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, as I watch these fields evolve, literally, I saw them start to lighten. And that's why we've had so many conflicting names for the children, the dolphin children, the rainbow children, the crystalline children. They're all the same. They were in different parts of that evolution. The energy fields were originally very jewel tones, deep, rich, golden, and burgundy red, and forest green, and midnight blue. And they moved really fast like a searchlight. Then, over the last, you know, decade or so, those fields have now achieved a balance and a stillness and a sentience which is what we're seeing in the newest babies, which I'm calling the children of light, because they have completely white energy fields that are clear as a bell, and it's completely source energy, meaning that these new children are living mass potential. They can become and evolve and even shapeshift into any kind of being they choose because they carry all of it. Fascinating.
And does their relationship with their past lives, original planets, does that influence them in what they're doing here now? Is there that connection, that communication to influence
yes.
them here now?
Yes, many of them are master souls. They've had a lot of experience in lifetimes. They've gained so much wisdom, and they've come back with that intact. It's not so much inherited, but have been lived as a soul, and the wisdom that has been gained from that. We also
have many
have
of them.
New, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say there's a lot of new souls coming in too that are very innocent and pure that we haven't seen much of in previous times.
And that's what I was going to ask you is what is the percentage, or do you know, of these children being here now? Have they ever been in human form before? Is this a first for many of them, any of them?
You know, most of them are master souls. You look in their eyes and you see deeply. I mean, it's like you fall into them. And by the way, it's not just the pretty, cute, blue-eyed kids with blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's across the planet. Every culture, every nation, every type of race on our planet is experiencing this. And for the most part, there are old souls. But what I'm beginning to see now are souls that are coming in with pure creation potential energy, the light of the source. That's them. And it's too soon. It's only been going on for a couple of years. I don't really know what's going to happen with them. And I'm not yet sure, because it's so new, whether they're brand new or they're the most experienced yet. My sense is that they're crossing all timelines, and they're coming in embodied, past, present, future, here, now, and they carry a sweet power that we have never witnessed on this planet ever.
And their potential for forgetfulness, as you were sharing, as they get indoctrinated into our societal ways based on, you know, who their parents are, et cetera, it becomes diminished at 7 or 8. So what of this, of these masters that are here, to express and be as masters on this planet, what happens, Meg, as they begin to not remember, or do they stop remembering? And what happens then?
Many of them stop remembering because they're socialized out of their true nature. That's the nicest way I know how to put that. But what they're doing, what I'm noticing, is that when they get to a certain age, it's like another piece of them kicks in. And that's
okay,
age 10
that's
or
what
11.
I wanted to know.
Yeah,
okay.
That's age 10 or 11. And instead of being scary, woo-woo, I remember all this stuff, they go into action mode. And action mode can look like a lot of things. I've talked about one of my favorite examples is the Children of Quixote that was started by a 10-year-old child in France. He saw that there were a lot of homeless people in his village more than ever, and he was incensed by that. And he took his little red pup tent, and he put it by the river in a state of protest, and it caught on. I think you and I talked about this years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still my favorite. And before it was over, the Children of Quixote and adults, children, everybody, every river in France was lined with red tents, and awareness
that.
Was brought forward. Kids starting food drives so that children have equality in the lunchroom. My granddaughter did an awesome thing. Her aunt on the other side of her family had pancreatic cancer and did pass away from it. But during that process, Haley was like, so what do we know about it? What can be done? She's brilliant. She's one of these kids, and she's way ahead in school. And when she started researching, she realized that there really wasn't that much known and that the survival rate of this particular cancer is pretty scary. And so I want to apologize if you're hearing my dogs. We're having coyote issues the last couple nights, and I think that's what's going on out there. I apologize.
No worries.
I live out in the middle of nowhere, and it comes with a lot of different things.
No worries.
So I lost my train of thought because I was worried that that was disruptive. I apologize. Do you know where I was?
I'm just trying to think about where you were just at.
Oh, so I did. I know. So Haley decides she's going to start breeding these beautiful bracelets. And she sells them for $1 to $3, depending on the pattern. And she starts saving money towards donating towards this cause. Well, other kids heard about it. And before she was done, she was 10 years old. She was running a crew of 47 children out of the school library after school, and they were making these things, and they were raising so much money and creating so much awareness that the regional news picked up. And that's what we're starting to see in the headlines, is these kids at this age inventing things, standing up for social reform, science,
women's
medical
rights, equality,
everything,
all of it. It's, what's interesting is I'm involved in a global project that will come to fruition in 2015, and my part in it is as a mentor to these youth ambassadors from all over the world, and they're from the ages of 16 to 22, and their accomplishments, Meg, are beyond. They're literally at the 11th grade, they're changing pockets of this world that us as adults, we talk about it, we think about it, we once in a while go over there and do something about it. But these youth have been blessing my life by just showing me what's so possible and what comes as second nature to them.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
comes as second nature to them, and talking with them, they forgot more than I know. They're absolutely extraordinary beings. And so what you're saying, I'm really in resonance with it in terms of what they're doing. And what I was curious about when I asked about if they're being socialized out of their mastery and out of their brilliance, then what happens? There would be a great loss, but now you're saying it will start coming back on at 10
and
11
years old. Well, that's what it looks
like.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. They're finding a different way to step into their power. And it's quite natural, and it's quite brilliant. But the flip side of that is, okay, and here's what we need to watch. There's a couple of things. When we tell them, no, it's not real, when we tell them they can't see what they're seeing or they didn't do what they said they did, mm-hmm. we are creating a sense of devaluing these children. And we need to be really careful to let them be who they are and listen to them and even ask for details when appropriate. I don't mean go off in Never Never Land and start, you know, asking them so many questions that they start making things up. But when they say these profound things, we need to listen. Because what happens is they start to get the ones that are not thriving, like the ones you and I were just talking about, are going the other way. Mm-hmm. And that's not okay. They mm-hmm. feel like they're broken. Their parents think they're broken, and they're not. They're differently abled. They are different kind of human beings. Mm-hmm. We were part of that. It's evolution. That's what happens. So we have to be really, really careful that we give them a sense of really good value. The second piece
and also
of this is,
in your book, there's a uh-huh. great chapter with a lot of the questions that they ask, and you call it true or false section. And it would
I had fun writing
for,
that.
Huh?
I had a lot of fun writing that.
Oh, that was great. It is great. All of the book is great. It would be interesting, I'm sure, to many to read that so that they're helped, whether it's as a parent or a grandparent, which we both are, and to discover what we can do when they're talking to us and not to put them off or that's crazy or poo-poo them or, oh, no, that's just a monster under the bed sort of conversation.
Yeah, you know, our first thing that we responsively do is tense up and get afraid of what they're saying, that something's wrong with them, if we don't know any better. I'm saying the royal we, okay? The best thing to do is relax and just listen. A lot of those invisible friends are real. Spirits do visit these kids, because they're high frequency, they're like little antennas, and they can see them. And there's a lot that's happening, you know, and it seems at night to be prevalent in the bedroom and the bathroom. Not sure exactly why the bathroom, but there's a lot of times that beings are very curious. These children are a clarion call in all of creation that humanity is waking up. And so across dimensions, there's a lot of curiosity, and it scares the kids because they don't know what's happening. That's not the kind of real their parents are showing them or we are showing them as a society. And they need to know they're okay, and they need to learn how to handle that. And they also need to learn how to handle what the immensity of what they're feeling. And it's kind of like, I use this analogy. Children pick up everything around them naturally. They can't help it. And so to teach them how to discern what's theirs and what's not, it's kind of like witnessing a conversation across the room. You heard every word, but it wasn't about you. It was two people talking, and there was nothing you had to do about it. When you have feelings, they're the same way. Sometimes we feel how other people feel. And so ask yourself, is this mine or is it something else? And if it is yours, then okay, what do you want to do about it? How do you want to feel about it? Or is there an action required? Or if it's really not yours and you're picking it up from outside of you, which they do, then use that conversation analysis and just tell them, oh, that's just an observation. You were a witness, but you are not responsible. And, of course, use language age appropriate. But that's one of the greatest things we could teach them early on, that and to communicate how they feel and what they are experiencing. Don't make them hide it.
And something else, too, and this is actually, it really hurt my heart. You made it perfectly clear in Children of Now Evolution that these children, though they have extraordinary gifts, what they don't have are coping mechanisms to deal with the new arrangements of energy that they carry inside of them. So what do we do to help them cope?
Believe it or not.
And what does coping look like for them, Meg?
Coping is all about information, having what they need to know they're okay. What happens is, truly, in families, one of these children or more will come along, and they'll start seeing stuff. And the parents go into immediate, oh, my God, this is going to reflect on me. My kid's crazy. Or how come people feel better when my child touches them? That scares me. You know, there's so many religious connotations to human life and dogma that we're taught that certain things are not okay because they're not normal. Well, the truth is, you know, a lot of texts were rearranged way back when, millennia ago, to hide the fact that we are all powerful, we are all carrying these same abilities, and things were created even like in certain churches, people are made to cover their crowns with a hat, a cap, or a veil. Why? Because I suppose that was thought that it would desensitize it and stop us from realizing what we're able to do. It stopped us from being able to, you know, just that sense of being second to something else, denied our perfection, which we were always and couldn't be anything else except by perception. So we need to change our perceptions. We need to be able to give these kids a lot of room to be who they are, but they do not function well without framework. They need to know that their days have a certain look and a certain feel and a certain predictability so that they can function with who they are and feel like they're safe and protected. You know, what's happening is so many kids are being running loose. Children's parents are working 2-3 jobs at a time, trying to make ends meet. Everything's fast. I cited studies in the book about the average parent and child at one point, or in one study, only spend about 28 minutes a week together.
Oh my God.
One-on-one. And there are other stats, too, and they're broken down. But it came down to about, the average was about 20 minutes a day. That was one of my jaw drops. It was like, wait a minute, when we were kids, family was everything.
Mm-hmm.
We had each other's backs, some of our family, some of ours didn't know what to do with that. But nevertheless, there was a stress on family and that tightness, that bond. And we're moving away from that because of all the input and the schedules and the pressure from society.
Yes, the pressure.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting what the media is doing to us in so many levels, and in other levels, people like us are using it to do something positive. But the media is so about drama and trauma and wear this and do that. And, you know, the commercials are crazier and crazier. And now they've got this whole, like, selfie thing going where people are going into extreme danger just to get a picture of themselves there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nuts. It's nuts. What's being portrayed is this is okay, and not only that, but you should be doing it. When, in fact, it's totally not even realistic. It's totally not relationship-driven. It's about achievement and accomplishment and value coming from false sources. I'm on my soapbox, sister.
That's okay. Yes, I'm letting you go, and it's fine for me that you are, and I think it's very important that you are. This whole book is a soapbox, quite frankly. And
yep.
You've taken a stand on everything, and it's remarkable book for anybody, whether you have children or not. And as we round out this hour, Meg, in the last, I don't know what, 8 minutes or whatever, I really would like to talk about the GMOs. Obviously, it's not a secret as to how the GMOs, the genetic modification of our foods, wreak havoc on our bodies. And now you have given us some pretty hardcore evidence about how the children, us too, are being affected exponentially, however, by GMOs, and not only physically, but in their consciousness and DNA as well. So let's talk about that. There's a soapbox I know you want to get up on.
You know what? Thank you for that. And the truth is, when I started writing this book, I knew very little about GMOs. And then I started researching, and I had some phenomenal assistance from people that really know what to do, you know where to look and are in the midst of this whole controversy. And I hit both sides of it. And I tried to do that all through the book, where I get the pros and I gave the cons. And the studies are outweighing the lies. I mean, they really are. Here's what happens. A GMO, just to define it quickly, is a genetically modified organism. For instance, there have been fish genes inserted into strawberry genetics so that they can weather frost better. There is Roundup being put into genetics of different plants, soybeans, different things like that, so that the plants are bug repellent. There have even been human genes inserted into our food chain. The list is long. I put a few powerful examples in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can look anywhere and find that any list you want. It's mind-blowing, and it's against nature. And what's happening is that because of the alterations that are being made in our food chain, it is affecting the entire, not only our food chain completely, but it's also changing our bodies. Our bodies are mutating in order to be able to process these foreign-type materials that they don't recognize. So what happens, for instance, with wheat, which we talk about the gluten and non-gluten issue, it's really more than that. When you break down the gluten, you get into things like gliadin, and when that breaks down, it plugs the cell receptors to the thyroid, because the thyroid gland misreads, because the cell receptor has now been plugged. That's what it looks for. It looks for that information. Those are little information packages. And those misreading packages are giving the thyroid different jobs to do at different times that are not normal. So we're seeing a lot of overweight people and children. We're seeing immune systems compromised from a similar phenomenon with the cell receptors. We're seeing digestive issues. We're seeing allergies and asthma in absolutely epidemic proportion. And it's getting worse. And the demands to label these foods have been beat down by lobbyists, absolutely snowing people and the propaganda right before elections. It happened here in Washington State, where they actually sent out all of these things about why GMOs are okay. Because there's a lot of money behind it. It's the big corporations. And they've patented stuff, including a lot of the human genome. We may have been patented, in fact. We don't know. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really big thing. And as it gets into our ground and our rivers and our wildlife and in our livestock and then into market and into our bodies, it's strange and really crazy things are happening in the way that these nutrients are being assimilated. So it's not just changing us. It's changing everything that we do to use to survive in our bodies, even our water, everything. Mm-hmm. So it's a really bad, big deal. It's a really big, bad deal. And there's a very good, clean, clear chapter on that in the book. And if you don't know anything about GMOs and you want to learn very quickly, I wrote it that way because it's a scary, big, confusing subject. And I wanted to give both sides, but I also wanted to show what happens as this breaks down in the body and why we need to be more careful about what we're putting in our bodies and in our children. And so you can, one of the easiest things that you can do is look for non-GMO, non-gluten labels. Mm-hmm. If it says organic, it may or may not be. Make sure you know it came from somewhere local that you can trust. But look for non-GMO and non-gluten stuff, and that will help tremendously. I started doing that as I was writing the book, and it completely changed. The other thing that is happening in bodies that's really common is inflammation, sore joints, what blanketed diagnosis as fibromyalgia-type symptoms are happening from the breakdown of these things that are not ever meant to be inside of us.
Is there a way to reverse this with the children or even with the adults that are listening? Is there a way to reverse this?
Yes. Stop eating it. Stop buying it. Stop doing it. Stand up and say, no, this isn't okay. If you want
and
to
the reversal process will happen.
Yes. It's not too late to stop the mutation. It's not. But we have to act on it. And frankly, at least in America, we've become a society of convenience. And we're not so careful about that because it seems like we're always in a hurry. Take time. Make sure. If it has too many big words, there's something in it you don't want. That's a really good rule of thumb. A lot of big scientific words, those are chemicals, plastics, different things like that, in addition to the genetic modifications that you're being fed. You know, even like the fluoride thing, and that's not a new issue. That came from the nuclear industry having a lot of fluoride waste and not knowing what to do with it. So they decided they'd put it in people's water and gave it a branding of will help to protect the plaque in your teeth. Well, that was a snow job. But what's happening now is so out of hand, you can't even track it all. You can't.
So last quick question. What's the most important thing, Meg, that any one of us can do for these children, regardless of whether we do or don't have young children or any children, but as a moral responsibility to ensure that the divine plan for our new earth and this new species of human can be supported and brought fully into a healthy and sustainable creation?
Thank you, Maureen. That's a great question. I'll say it in a few words. Be diligent. Be aware. Consider that there are other things possible than you know. And most of all, walk your talk. Be that divine being in all of creation as you live your life every day and teach by example. don't buy the things that we know are hurting people. Say no. Have courage. Don't be easily led. We can change this one person at a time, and then we will get critical mass on that, and that's where the kids are going to come in a few years. They're going to make those changes. But let's give them a paved road to go there.
Thank you, Meg. The book is The Children of Now, Evolution, How We Can Support the Fast-Forward Evolution of Our Children and All of Humanity, available on Amazon. And Dr. Meg's website is Spirit Light, it's SPIRITLITE.com. Meg, as always, it was a pleasure having this conversation with you. And again, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for bringing to light this most important book. I absolutely love you. Thank you.
I love you back. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Your questions are phenomenal. And thanks for helping me to support the kids, because that's what I'm about. It's not about how many books I sell. It's about the information.
Well, thank you again. And to our audience, I wish you all the blessings, all of the grace, all of the love and the light that you can hold. This is your host, Maureen Moss. Until next time, namaste.